Welcome in, everybody, to SEC Football and Beyond. I am Chris Landry, and yes, Neil McCready will be joining us on what has turned out to be a very busy day. And Neil's working on a story, some breaking news that is he's working on, that is around the world of SEC baseball. And as you see the aforementioned Neil McCready right there, Neil, welcome. I was just telling the folks that we are, it's a busy day. It's a lazy June 15th and nothing's going on other than we've got the College Baseball World Series. And we are a predominantly football show, but we weave in a lot of stuff. But not often do you have like breaking news potential components as we do the show live, but we do have that, obviously. LSU has a baseball opening. We'll get into that, kind of where that has gone and why that has hit roadblocks the past couple of weeks as Paul Maneri is officially retired at LSU. But obviously LSU is, I have talked, Neil is on top of it. I'm going to turn it over to him. I know LSU has made an offer, I was told this morning, we're going to see where that goes. We probably won't have an answer for you before we go off the air live, but we're going to have an answer today. More than likely, I don't know that. I shouldn't say that. It may take a little bit longer, but we're on the cusp. Neil, man, it's appreciate you joining us on your show. He's so busy that, look, sometimes things take a priority. That's why we do it together, because sometimes bleep happens as we're doing this show live. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Chris. So you probably, and probably because you're
I'm just laughing. The old Sammy says, "Good morning, Chris." An empty chair. It's not empty anymore. The handsome one has returned from his important phone call. Go ahead.
I've got, as you know, a lot of experience as a former newspaper guy, and I've treated this site as newspaper-ish as I can over the last 13 years. And so on these coaching searches or coaching developments, I always try to be 100% before you get out on a limb, because kind of once you climb out on a limb, it's hard to turn around and get back to the trunk of the tree. So you probably just said that a little stronger than I'd feel completely comfortable with it, but I think you're absolutely probably right at the same time. I can't independently confirm that LSU has extended an offer to a coaching candidate, but I've heard it from enough people who are connected to it to believe that that's probably true. I believe that if that offer has been extended, and again, I think it probably has, I just can't independently confirm that it has. It's to Mike Bianco, the Ole Miss coach. And while I feel compelled to say I don't know precisely what Mike would do, because I don't know what is in this offer, everything that I'm hearing, everything that every instinct is that Mike will take it. He's been at Ole Miss for 21 seasons. It's a long time, Chris, when you think about it. He took this job when he was in his early 30s, very early 30s. He was, for those who don't know, Mike played two seasons at LSU. Then he was an assistant on Skip Bertman's staff. He was a part of three national championship teams at LSU. He left LSU to be the head coach at McNeese, which is a small school in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And then he did a phenomenal job at McNeese, and he got hired at Ole Miss to rebuild a program that had kind of hit a wall. And Mike's done a terrific job at Ole Miss. There's a flaw in his resume in 20 seasons. He's been there 21, but you can't hold 2020 against anybody because nobody had an opportunity to get to Omaha because there was no Omaha. But in 20 seasons, he's been to the College World Series once. That's not a good number. Now, on the flip side, in 20 seasons, he's been to the NCAA tournament 17 times, 85% of the time. It's a hell of an accomplishment. In 20 seasons, he's hosted a regional in Oxford 10 times, half the time. it's a remarkable number. There are a handful of programs that do better than that, but most programs would look at that and go, oh, pump that straight into my veins. He's been able to do that at Ole Miss. He has coached in, I think it's 9 games, where if Ole Miss won, it would have advanced to the College World Series. You can probably guess the number. He's 1-8. That's a bad number. So there's a consistency to him that he has pretty much turned Ole Miss into a program that is consistently somewhere between the 9th and 16th best program in the country, which is really good, unless your goal is to be one of the best 8, at which point you're right there at the door and you're banging on the door and it just won't budge. So LSU's gamble here is, and we've talked about this a lot, LSU, this is a complicated thing for LSU. This is more than just a search for a baseball coach. This is LSU, the program has fallen off a little bit in the last few years under Paul Mainieri. It's still a very good program. They just played in a super regional in Knoxville. It's a good program, but it's not the program that it was in its heyday at this point. It got all the resources in the world to be that program, but it's not right now. But there, as you know, Chris, we've talked about this a lot on this show, there has been a lot of things that have happened at LSU off the field. There's a Title IX investigation that has already gotten ugly and has a chance to get even uglier. You've got a men's basketball coach who is certainly in the crosshairs of the NCAA as to what may or may not happen. He's called on a federal wiretap talking about a strong-ass offer, and there's other stuff too. So LSU really needs to hire a clean baseball coach. They need somebody to come in with baseball that they won't have to worry about. They need a baseball program that is running, that is competitive, that is winning at a high level, but that they're not having to send people, they're not having to use resources from a compliance standpoint or whatnot to deal with baseball when they've got all these issues in other sports. And Mike is squeaky clean. He's a fantastic person. His wife, Cammy, is a absolute community leader here in Oxford. Their kids.
I believe she's from Baton Rouge.
I think Cammy is from Baton Rouge. She went to LSU. All the kids are gone with the exception of the youngest, Catherine, who is will be a rising senior at Oxford High School this fall. So, you know, they've been a big part of the community. 21 years is a long time. LSU offers Mike an opportunity to coach at his alma mater. It offers him an opportunity to reset. He's going to have a honeymoon phase because all new coaches have honeymoon phases. And LSU is making the gamble, if this happens, and I think it will, LSU is making the gamble that, hey, look, we think we're a better program than Ole Miss. We think that if he can get to this place at Ole Miss, we can get him over the top. We can take him from that one win away from the Omaha, which is what they've been the last 2 seasons. They lost in game 3 of the Arkansas Super Regional in 2019. They lost in game 3 of the Tucson Super Regional on Sunday night. So they've been one game away, one win away from Omaha a bunch. And LSU's gamble is that, well, we think we're at least one game better as a program than LSU, and we'll get him there. And so we'll find out. And then if that happens, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Keith Carter, the Ole Miss athletics director, to make a kind of a splashy, and splashy is the wrong word, but it's the only word that's coming to mind. Make a hire that makes it very indicative to a fan base and to recruits that, hey, I know our coach left for LSU. We're happy for him. We're not taking a step back. If anything, we're taking a step forward. And there aren't that many names out there who represent that. Because for all of the criticism of Mike, and there's plenty of it here, you also have to acknowledge what he's done for your program. It's you see the pictures, Chris, we talked about, I think back in, you know, because it was, hey, God, isn't it great to be back to normal after COVID, you know, Ole Miss played Arkansas here. I think it was in April, and it was kind of, you know, all the mask mandates had been expired. Restaurants were back open. The stadium was back to 100%. And we referred to that, if you remember correctly, as normal. Isn't it great to be back to normal? Well, that normal didn't exist before Mike Bianco. Mike's made Ole Miss baseball a a must-see thing if you are an Ole Miss person, if you live near Oxford, if you come up from Jackson or down from Memphis or over from Birmingham on five SEC weekends a year for baseball. Well, not everybody has that. And Ole Miss didn't always have that. So it's a complicated thing, as it is for anybody who's been in a job for 21 years when he or she leaves for another job. I personally think it's time. I don't think the program is stale necessarily, but it feels like it is bumping against a ceiling. And whether that's Mike's ceiling or whether that's Ole Miss's ceiling or whether that's just Mike's Ole Miss ceiling is something that there's only one way to find out, and that's to move forward. And I think that I think Mike's going to be the head coach at LSU. I don't know that it's going to happen today. If you told me it happened today, I'm not surprised. I do think it's likely to happen, but this is where journalistically.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get nervous on the journalism thing because here's what you don't know, right?
You don't know that he's not going to take it, or you don't know.
These are humans, and he does have a daughter who's still in high school, so you don't know if in when it comes to that moment when you have to pull the trigger on changing your life, you don't know if he says, you know what, this is my program, I built this. Ole Miss is, let me make this clear, Ole Miss is not firing Mike Bianco. No, not a chance. Not this year. They were one win away from Omaha. So you don't know whether he goes, hey, you know what? This is not something I wanted to do. And then you know where this goes, Chris, where everybody goes, was there an offer? Was there not an offer? You don't really usually formally present the offer to the person's representation until you know he or she is going to take it. And so that's where we are in these hours, and that's why my phone could ring at any minute, or it might take till tomorrow or whatever, but that's where it certainly appears to be headed. Your sources that you referenced before this long 10-minute diatribe here, I agree with them.
Skip Bartman's been recruiting Mike Hart.
Yes, I think that is
so
true.
I mean, he's just been – I mean, so, I mean, there we can – yeah, we can get some antics and correct. You don't have to say – Mike, it's not like get down on one knee, sweetheart, will you marry me? I mean, that's a formal thing that you do when you're having somebody's hand in marriage. Doesn't happen that way in coaching searches. It is, it is, you're making an offer. It's pretty clear what they're doing. I mean, you know, but you're not mouthing the words.
The wedding example's a really good one. Like, if you're the guy that you go buy the ring and you get down on the knee, if there's even a thought in the back of your mind that she might not say yes, right? If you're down on your knee with the ring in your hand and you say, baby, and you start in on the diatribe of all the you love her and you can't live. If there's even a thought in the back of your mind that, you know what, she might not do this, you might not need to be asking this right this moment. You might want to get to a place where there's
exactly right. Well, and a couple of things on this. So people say, all right, so Skip Bartman making a hire? No. Scott Woodard, the athletic director, is a guy that likes to make big splash hires. That's his thing. He's only really made one. And that's the women's basketball coach. And Kim Mulkey, he got because of her ties to Louisiana. But I can tell you that the person that he had help convince Kim to come happened to be a really good friend of mine. The longest tenured coach in LSU sports history is the lady that just retired, Dee Dee Brough. Dee Dee, the gymnastics coach. Dee Dee and I grew up in the same subdivision together in a little town, Donaldsonville, Louisiana, between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. And so once he was going after Kim Mulkey, that was an easy hire, right? I mean, she's won three titles. She is the big splash hire in that world. So there you go. He wanted to go big game hunting here. There was never anything like with the Tim Corbin or a Dave Van Horn. Kevin O'Sullivan was somebody that they wanted.
Yes.
And Kevin O'Sullivan wanted the job.
Yes.
But the issue off the field, I don't want to get into it. You check that out and all that. That, and we discussed this Friday, That was rejected by the board. Before an official board meeting, you don't go to, again, you don't go to official board meeting unless you've run it by all those people and they give the stamp, because why have a meeting and have them rejected? You should know that beforehand. So that didn't work. And that's when Kevin took his name out of the job after was told he wasn't going to get it. Pat Casey, the former Oregon State baseball coach, is now in administration, is somebody that Scott wanted. Successful, you know, coach there. That died on the vine, as we mentioned Friday, because of his decision to allow, a few years ago, allow a baseball pitcher to compete. After that baseball pitcher was accused of sexual assault of a minor. And so those are things that just kind of, those died in the vine because of the current circumstances at LSU, where you're dealing with a sexual assault issue on campus. And I can tell you that is one of those things that is above the athletic director. It's above the president. It's probably even above the board. It's one of those things where you're dealing with right now. Everybody's going to the League of, you know, Women Against Sexual Assault and all these governmental issues and getting quotes on, what do you think about this being a candidate, blah, blah, blah. And it dies pretty quickly. So Scott's run out of what you would call big name hires. I mean, they're good coaches out there, but unless he's going to pull off, he's not getting Tony Vitello, he's not getting Tim Corbin, he's not getting those type of guys. The big name guys are off the board right now, and sometimes that happens. And so what is happening is you turn to Skip Bertman and Paul Maneri, and what do you think? And obviously Mike Bianco's a big name, and, you know, he may not be as big as some of those others, or maybe he is. I don't know. That neither here or there. I think you hit on it. It might be good for both. Maybe, you know, Mike getting over in 21 years, and it's hard for me to believe it's been 20 plus years, because it seems like he was catching over there 5 years ago to me. Maybe it's a chance for him to go somewhere where he can take, you know, he can maybe improve his chances of getting a title. And then for Ole Miss, maybe if they can convince maybe the guy from Louisville who's got a background, McDonald, who's the Cliff Godwin, maybe it's a reset for Ole Miss. Maybe they think that Mike has taken it as far as he can, or, you know, and so it may be one of those things that maybe Ole Miss would kind of like to see him stay, but maybe kind of excited if they get maybe some new juice and maybe he can go to the, you know, one of those things.
It's funny you mentioned Dan McDonald, because you and I did not discuss this beforehand, because any pre-show that we were going to have got interrupted when I had to take a phone call. Listen, there's a scenario that could potentially be in play where everybody wins here, where Mike takes the LSU job and Dan McDonald leaves Louisville for Ole Miss. It's kind of a win for everybody. Not a knock on Mike at all, but Dan would get people excited. He took over Louisville. Louisville was a nothing program. He made it a national power. I think they've been to Omaha 7 times. In, I don't, 14, 15 years. I need to look up the math, and I will look up the math here in a little bit, and because I've got some stuff to write. But, you know, can they get Dan? I don't know. Can they get Dan to take the phone call? Yeah, I think so. Can they get Dan to listen? I think so. Can they pay Dan? I don't know that. I don't know what Ole Miss's financial situation is. They're paying Mike 1.2. Probably have to pay Dan, I'm guessing, 1.5 to 1.8 to get him to listen. Can they do that? I don't know. Can you and should you are two different things. And if it's not Mike, you know, my guess would be that the next person on the list would be Cliff Godwin. And after Cliff, I wouldn't know where Ole Miss would turn. And that's where things could get a little squirrely. You know, if you always, there's a assumption sometimes that a search will go a certain way and then it doesn't. And next thing you know, you're in scramble mode. And we've seen that happen. And And sometimes scramble mode can get ugly, but I would think, and I don't even know why I'm trying to be coy here. Ole Miss will absolutely, assuming that Mike leaves for LSU, Ole Miss will absolutely make sure that Dan McDonald knows that the job's his if he wants it. Mm-hmm. And they'll make him say no probably more than once. And then at some point you would move on. There was a sentiment last night, Chris, that Dan might be more interested today than he would have been, say, 2 years ago. That, you know, he's not working for Tom Jurich anymore. That fell apart at Louisville. He was very frustrated with the Louisville people during the COVID thing when they wouldn't open up the stadium and, you know, they didn't have the environment that he has spent years creating at Louisville, where Louisville baseball has become a big deal. And he was very frustrated. And he's working for an AD now who is a little bit more of a penny pincher, working for an AD now who is not as interested in college baseball. That he's more interested today. He spent time in Oxford. He was on Mike's staff early on, was a big part of what Mike built in Oxford. His kids are still Ole Miss fans. His wife loved Oxford. I mean, there's a lot there. But again, you know, Dan's a guy that's at Louisville, and that's his program. I mean, you think about Louisville baseball, and his name comes up very first. He built that program, and so he would have to be willing to let go of that and come back to an SEC program. But I'll tell you this, you look around this league right now in baseball. I know we talk a lot of football, and we're going to switch to football in a minute, but you look around this league in baseball right now, Texas A&M just hired Jim Schlossnagel, who did a phenomenal job at TCU. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tennessee is in the College World Series. Mississippi State, Chris Lemonis has taken Mississippi State back to the College World Series. Arkansas didn't make the College World Series, but they spent the season ranked number one in the country, and they went into the ninth inning of game three tied. So they're one run from the College World Series.
And Vanderbilt LSU has the best program going right now.
Yeah, Vanderbilt is the best program in the country, and they're back in the College World Series as the prohibitive favorite to win it again. That would be Tim Corbin's third title at Vanderbilt. I mean, you just look around the league. I mean, even LSU in a, quote, down year was playing in the Super
Bowl. It still may be the most attractive. LSU still may be the most attractive in its own way in that the support and the – I don't know that anybody cares more about it than the LSU folks. I mean, they're just, like, ridiculously into it. Kind of like NASCAR is big. Like, if you go in Carolina and they're talking NASCAR, like, man, what do you think? The crew chief, they got a new guy to bring in the riches. You know, it's like, it is more of a, you're a big dude on campus if you're the LSU baseball coach, maybe as much as anywhere else, even though Vanderbilt's got a better program. And Arkansas may have a little bit more going for it with their, you know, border law. And I will say this, if you are, and we haven't even got to it, there's one, we got three SEC teams in the World Series, and it is a real surprise that we don't have a fourth, if not a fifth. And so it's where you're going to make the most money. It's where you're going to, well, I mean, everything leads to more money. And so it is the best, by far, the best baseball league, the baseball people tell me. And if you look at the jobs that are really good, you just mentioned them. So you could make the case that there are more programs that can do things than maybe even some of the bigger sports. Like you just mentioned, Vanderbilt, well, they got their own thing. Tennessee, I guess they're going to pay Vitello. He's not going to leave this year.
Well, they're talking about building a new stadium.
They're going to build a new stadium. Now, he's not happy about it being shared with a AA, but we'll see. They're not even where they need to be. You go to A&M and they just hired Schlossnagel, Bluebell Park, Florida. But Mississippi State, they can't compete for national titles in football. They can in baseball.
Absolutely.
I mean, they got the Taj Mahal, and that is the original great program in the SEC. That was the first one that did it when nobody else was doing it. And you know, you start looking at it, it's like, man, they may have more teams that can do in baseball than even in football when you think about it.
South Carolina won a couple of national
titles. Carolina won a title. You're not going to win a national championship in football in South Carolina.
Yeah, Arkansas just spent an entire ranked number one in college baseball. I know that fell short, but they were absolutely a national championship caliber team. So you can win a national championship at Arkansas. I mean, their fans don't like to think about it, but there was a pop fly down the first baseline that if one of three guys catch it 2 years ago or 3 years ago, they are the national
champ. That's right. That's right.
You know, you can win a national title at Ole Miss. Ole Miss finished third in the country just 7 years ago in college baseball. Had they beaten Virginia in the first game, they probably would have won the national title. So, you know, I mean.
And then you got a place like Georgia that's, you know, really not done in Alabama that, you know, they haven't done it, but there's no reason why they can't do it. I mean, Kentucky's, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, you look at it. I mean, there are not many programs that you look at and say can't really do it. I mean, Auburn, and I haven't really heard much from Auburn. I remember back in the day when the big hurt and all. I mean,
they were in the College World Series just a few years ago.
Yeah, a few years ago. So look, everybody has a chance. Missouri hasn't. I guess, you know, I don't know much about that. Well, that's where Vitello came from.
Yeah, Missouri's probably the one program that doesn't care at all about it. I don't think Alabama cares a ton because they're so invested in other things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look around the league and there's...
But shoot, Neil, I mean, look how good Alabama softball is.
Sure.
I mean, it's like, I would think that, you know, they've got everything they need to do it if they get the right guy. And, you know, but anyway, so look, I'm not big into, I don't follow, kind of watch it now, keep track of it. But if you're a baseball guy, and I've learned this from the baseball folks, and I've only talked to a few folks because of, you know, the LSU situation, this is where you want to be. So, you know, and I wonder, kind of. So look, to recap for those that are just joining us, my understanding, you know, after going through a number of candidates that just didn't pass the muster of the maybe potential off the field issues at LSU, that Scott Woodard is kind of leaning a lot towards Skip Bertman, who's been pushing a lot for Mike Bianco and recruiting Mike Bianco. And my understanding is that's where that is. It's Mike Bianco's job if he wants it. We'll see what he does. I'm not. I don't know. I mean, I know of Mike. I remember Mike when he played. I don't know him. Neil does. I don't know what he would do, what he's going to do, I don't know any of that stuff. But we'll see how that plays out. I know Cliff Godwin has got a background with Paul Maneri. I don't know. This is unfair to say this. This is speculative. I would think, you know, whatever, I'm sure Maneri's in line with not that he's the type that would, you know, say you should. I think he probably would push for Godwin because maybe he's a little bit closer with him. I don't know that. I don't know what's his. But I would imagine the relationship with he and Bianco are really good because the relationship with Paul and Skip were really good. People will read into this that, okay, Skip Bertman's making the decision because, you know, obviously great baseball guy, but this is Scott Woodard kind of not striking out, but because I don't think it's fair to say he struck out on Kevin O'Sullivan. And I don't know if Kevin O'Sullivan would have been a good hire or not. I really don't know. I'm certainly not a baseball expert. But we know how that died and why that died and Pat Casey, whatever. I do know this, that he did tell me, Woody did, that because I guess he knows the A&M stuff, that he knows that he said the TCU guy, Schlossnagel, was either going to stay there at Fort Worth where he liked it or take A&M's money. We know how that went. So that take place. So, look, that's where it is. We may have a decision. I think it's, again, if Mike says yes, if he puts the ring on his finger, to go back to our analogy, then he could be, he will be the new next baseball coach if he accepts it. If he doesn't, then we'll see where LSU goes after that, if it's Godwin or someone else. I would still think that, this is my opinion, and I don't think it's like, the LSU job's not any less attractive. I think it's every bit as attractive because there's potential to win. I just think that sometimes you just can't get your guy. Okay, Kevin O'Sullivan, that's more on LSU not willing to accept him for things outside the athletic department. That's
deal got flagged, man.
Huh?
That deal got flagged.
Oh, well, man, it was like, and so in other words, it was like, it kind of tells me that, I mean, look, if Scott brings that to a couple of people on the board, that tells me Scott wanted to, he was thinking, all right, that might be the direction I like to, or maybe just floated ideas or whatever. Casey was somebody that got, that was a flag. That was maybe a handkerchief. I don't know. That wasn't maybe a full-blown flag, but that was, so I don't know that there's the big hot. I mean, I guess you could criticize LSU for saying, why can't you go get Tim Corbin? Well, because I think they think that most people think now that the Vanderbilt job is the best job in the SEC and that Arkansas may be the best job that's not a private school job. I mean, you know, and I think because of LSU and because of Mississippi State.
Well, here's the thing, Chris.
I think the SEC is becoming a big time baseball program where you can do it upright and people are proving that.
Well, and the SEC network makes every conference game national televised. Here's the thing, LSU did contact Tim Corbin. Everyone contacts Tim Corbin. Nobody can get Tim Corbin. He's turned Vanderbilt into the preeminent job in the country. He's on his way to a third national title potentially. He recruits anyone he wants to recruit. He runs the program his way. He doesn't have to deal with Vanderbilt's administration. He's got tons of former players now that come back to Vanderbilt to train in the offseason. The program recruits itself. I don't know if you're Tim Corbin, why in the world you'd leave Vanderbilt if it's not to become a major league manager, if that's what you want to do. I think Tim Corbin's going to stay at Vanderbilt for a long time until he decides to walk away. And then they'll, assuming that everything sort of stays the same, they'll get anybody they want. I mean, just because, you know, it's just right now today, it's the best job in the country because you have scholarship advantages there that you don't have anywhere else. And then Tim's done a phenomenal job with recruiting and building and all of those things. All right, I want to switch to, while I've still got you, in case I have to bolt in a minute. I was reading Andy Staples this morning on Twitter. Andy's my friend, covers college football for The Athletic. Known Andy since he was covering Florida back when I was covering Auburn. Andy made it a little bit bigger than I did, Chris. So Andy was talking about there's a lot of momentum right now, potentially, to move the playoff quarterfinals, the not the first round, which is going to be on campus, but the quarterfinals, 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5, to move those to college campuses because college programs are having a hard time getting their season ticket sales where they want them right now. And if you said, hey, look, if you want to go to the national quarterfinal game on campus here in Tuscaloosa or here at Auburn or here in Athens or Baton Rouge or Oxford or wherever, if you want the potential to get that ticket, you better have season tickets, bud, because otherwise you're going to be SOL paying 6-time prices on StubHub or Ticketmaster or anybody else who's potentially out there listening who would like to sponsor this show. We'd use your Ticket City or whatever. And so the other side of that, and you know where I'm about to go, is that the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl, these powerful bowls who have absolutely impacted scheduling over the last however many years of the college football playoff, they're going to say, not so fast. Not so fast. We want that 3 versus 6 game national quarterfinal in New Orleans at the Sugar Bowl. We do not want some 4-loss team versus some 3-loss team because they didn't make the playoffs in the Sugar Bowl. We don't want 4-loss Mississippi State versus 3-loss Wisconsin in the Sugar Bowl. That's not what we want. And that's the bowls have incredible power, especially the big bowls, over the way that playoff pairings and things have been done. Obviously, both things can't come to fruition. One's going to happen, one's not. Where do you sort of anticipate that going over the next 12 months?
Well, the thought process of while having those games at home, if you get a top seed and you have to play your first game at a neutral site, whereas somebody with a lower seed gets to host a game at home, they say, well, wait a minute, why did they get to host a game? You follow me? They think, well, what? Let's have that at home. We discussed it last week that the reasoning behind what they decided it this way was because of the money in the neutral sites, the extra money you get. So they're going to have to figure that out. I mean, I think it makes sense, more sense, to have those quarterfinal games at the home site. You got to make the money work. I mean, it no one cares about the fans, but you know, that's big. You can have your game at home. You earned it. Now, if you earn it, you have to go to Miami, New Orleans, Atlanta, wherever. And it's a little bit ass backwards. You know, I mean, in a setup of a tournament, which this is, it doesn't jive. But it's, as I said, when we discussed this was coming, and we discussed the details last week, it's all about the money. So how do they make a home game at Alabama bring in more money than if they played that same game, that first game that they would play in a neutral site? That's what they have to figure out. That's what they have to rectify. That's what they have to work through. Look, it's their job to figure out the finances of that. But that's where I think that's where I think the discussion is. And quite frankly, it's the only thing that really made people question about the 12-team playoff. Some people don't like it, and a lot of people don't. I mean, that's fine. But as you're going to do it, it's pretty fair to everyone. Even Notre Dame. Let me just tell you, I hear this narrative. Notre Dame's not screwed. Notre Dame, behind the scenes, are saying, shoot, we're fine with this. We're going to host a game every, we're not concerned, you know, the four, yeah, we may play, we'll have an extra home game. That means a lot. That means a whole lot. So they're likely, again, if they're seated, you know, where they normally can get seated, five or six, they're going to get an extra home game. They're fine with it. They know that they get a bye by not having to play in the conference championship game. So they might say things, but they're excited. I mean, Jack Swarbrick was on this committee, and, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where you say, maybe publicly, and he came out and said, anybody that think Notre Dame gets a you know, unfair shake, well, you can put that to rest. But quietly, he's going back in the room saying, we got a whole extra home game. They know that it's a pretty good deal for them. So, I don't know where it's going to go, but I think that's the one thing they're going to look at. And if they can make the finances work, I think that would be modified. I do.
What's interesting is there's some concern out there. Like, let's say you're an Alabama fan. You know, it's not even arrogant at this point to say, hey, well, we're going to be in the playoff. Absolutely. So if you're an Alabama fan and you go, well, the quarterfinal is going to be in a neutral site. The semifinal, if we win, is going to be in a neutral site, and we typically win. And the final, if we win, and we win most of the time, is going to be on a neutral site. That's 3 weeks that I got to travel with my family because we're going to go to the games. So we might have to travel to New Orleans and then to Miami and then to Pasadena. You know what? I think instead of buying season tickets this year, I'm going to save my money. I'll go to the neutral site game to open the season in Atlanta. And maybe I'll go to the game when Alabama plays at Ole Miss. Maybe I'll go to the game in the Grove. And then I'll go to those three playoff games. I'll spend less money than I would on season tickets, and I'll still see the games I want to see.
Right.
That's the concern. That's pretty pragmatic. But if that same fan goes, the only way I can get tickets to the quarterfinal is in Tuscaloosa is if I have season tickets. Now he's got a decision to make, and that's where this is going to get interesting.
And I think you've got to work through that and figure out what's the best, because there should be, if anything else, you know, the getting a top four seed. And for people who have asked and talked about it, the The top four seeds are conference champions. They have to be conference champions. If you've earned that, then there should be an advantage. There should be no disadvantage to that. And they need to kind of work through that so that to the satisfaction of everyone. We'll see how that goes. One of the things that I think is going to going to be the big thing, we should maybe know more this week. I think the floating of the information and everybody that's involved in this process, leak this out for a reason. You know how that is, the old political operative narrative. Let's float an idea and let's see how people, you know, and I do think there's enough there to where you can massage a few things like this. Now, this is a big issue. It's more than just a massage, but I think it's a fair point. It's the one thing that stood out to me and said, well, wait a minute. Okay. So if you're the fifth seed, you host a game. If you're the first seed, yeah, you get a bye, but you're going to go to a neutral site. And I think they're thinking, you know, no, let's make sure that everybody, can feel like, all right, there's no disadvantage to being the five seed, because that becomes a real competitive issue that you look at. Hey, we just don't be the 50. Well, no, because you got to play an extra game. But if you can get a bye, win your conference, and get a home game, that makes the most sense for the fans, for everyone. But how do they rectify? Are they leaving money on the table? I don't see anybody leaving any money on the table. Yeah, so let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm curious. And we got time because it can't happen this season. And I don't think it can happen in 22. So
it's 2023 the earliest.
Yeah, so they've got 2 years to get it all worked out. SEC Media Days are coming up in about 4 weeks, I guess. I anticipate that being a really big conversation when Greg Sankey takes the podium at the beginning. And by the way, SEC Media Days are going to be in person this year, which is awesome, because I think there had been concern that it was going to be, you know, virtual. I'm zoomed out. I mean, I think Zoom's Zoom is a nice tool, and you know, and there's some thought. It's kind of interesting. There's some thought that at least in 2021, that some schools are going to encourage visiting media to just do Zoom, maybe keep the press box from being a zoo, keep the sidelines from being a zoo, to maybe use this as a tool to sort of cull the herd, if you will, a little bit. But it's be the first time I've been going to games since the 19 season, which will be weird to be back in stadiums. But anyway, SEC Media Days will be in person, and that's going to be a big topic, because obviously this 12-team playoff, as you referenced the last time you and I were together, it didn't happen until the SEC signed off on it. The SEC had the ability to go, nope, not going to happen. And it happened, and it happened because the SEC felt confident with the way it's going to go. But there are some things that have to be addressed, and keeping the bowls happy and also keeping elite programs happy with their season ticket sales, it's going to require some finesse and some nuance, and we'll see.
Think about this. The SEC signed off on it. The AAC and the Mountain West are excited about it. Where can you go to get everybody? Please, this is not easy to do. In fact, I would have said it's damn near impossible. That's pretty good. Now, you know, a couple of things, and we'll address a couple of questions here. What does it really mean? Because again, I think it was Sammy that asked, "Are the top four seeds get by?" Yes, top four conference champions. Not likely that. I don't want to say never, because never is, you know, you're not going to see a G5 team. It's highly, highly, highly unlikely they're going to be, you know, a top four seed. It's possible in a year where all heck breaks loose, but unlikely. But they get their seat at the table. They get a shot. And so they're kind of excited there. And, you know, the getting a seat at the table is a big part of what they want. But the SEC signed off on it because it allowed the same amount of at-large teams, which who has their cup, you know, spilleth over every year with at-large team candidates that look like they could be playoff caliber. I mean, you know, it's the SEC. The other thing that I think is interesting is you notice that the SEC had even more say-so. And you say, well, of course they're the best. Keep in mind, I don't know what these discussions would have been like, or it, Neil, if they would have been different if Jim Delaney's in the room and John Swofford's in the room. I'm not saying I know what their stance would be. I kind of think I know what Jim Delaney's stance was. Swofford may be more along the lines of, you know, going along the line with the SEC's doing. Those two guys are gone. So let's look at it. We've obviously Greg Sankey is people will look at, and he replaced a legendary commissioner. And people criticize Greg. He's done a nice job. He's just his only fault is he's not the other guy that he replaced. Oh, okay, well, you can't do anything about that. ACC, new commissioner, John Swofford's gone. Big Ten, we know that Kevin Warren is not in any sort of power position. Neither is the ACC guy. Bob Bowlsby is moved up in kind of a voice that's louder than those two, but they're not the Big 12. The Pac-12's got a commissioner that they ran out of town and got a new one. So I think the timing had a lot to do with this too. I think COVID issues, I think loss of revenue, I think the leadership changes had a lot. Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC all have new commissioners that have no real power or the voice is not as strong in the room. So if Greg's okay with the SEC, and you can get the, because we're in an era of everybody should get a chance, then, you know, Mike Oresko's had a loud voice, the Mountain West Conference Commissioner. Now, Craig's been involved in it. And again, Jack Swarbrick is the de facto commissioner because he's the Notre Dame Athletic Director. Those folks all saw merit in it. I'm sure that they didn't agree and love everything, but they saw, you know what? This is a pretty good deal for us.
It's a pretty good deal for us. The more I think about it, the more I love it. Initially, I didn't like 12 teams. I thought it's too many. But it works in the NFL. And how often do wild card teams go to the Super Bowl? Not often. But you and I spent time on our show talking about the wild card games. Hey, who's going to win this game between the Colts and the Chargers or whatever? And neither one of those teams – I'm just making teams up. Those, you know, typically the fifth or sixth seed in the AFC or the NFC is not going to the Super Bowl. We talk about those games.
Right.
And you and I talked about this the last time we did a show. So let's say you do that 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11, 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9, and then the 8 seed is Cincinnati. And Cincinnati gets Oklahoma on campus. How big of a game is that for Cincinnati? How big of a game is that for TV? I'm watching. And so instead of what you do, you have to give some credit to the people that are running college football who looked at it over the last few years and said, hey, you know, we've got this powerhouse. Yes. College football is big time and everybody loves it and everybody watches it and we're making money hand over fist. But if we take a step back and look at what's really happening in our sport, we've got the same teams in the playoff every year. There's a little bit of fatigue. It's a little stale. The bowl games have lost some of their luster. The top players are opting out of bowl games with regularity now. Remember when Christian McCaffrey did it, it was like, oh, my God. Now it's like, yeah, I figured he would. No one thinks anything about it. So maybe we ought to get ahead of this. We're in great shape, but if we let this thing continue like this, maybe we decline. And you never want to decline. And so maybe they're saying this is our opportunity to sort of read the tea leaves, get ahead of this, and make a big jump. And that first year, Chris, in 2023, when it's a 12-team playoff, that preseason is going to be so much more interesting than the preseason that we're about to have, which is still going to be interesting. But now, instead of the conversation in this part of the country being, hey, can anybody beat Alabama? I don't think so. Who could possibly? Now it's like, hey, you know what? You don't have to beat Alabama to make the playoff. And so you suddenly have a completely different conversation over the course of a season, where even in the course of a year, like let's take LSU. Let's just use them as an example. We've talked about LSU a lot today, so why not make it a trend? Say you have an LSU team that's kind of young, got a young quarterback, got a good defense, but the quarterback's kind of young, and they drop a game early in the season. Maybe they drop two games, but then they become a house of fire, right? And they end up 10-2, and they don't play for the SEC title because they didn't make the game, but they're 10-2, and they're in the playoffs as the 9 seed. Well, no, in a normal year, that 10-2 LSU team that didn't make the championship game, they're playing in the Capital One Bowl against Penn State or somebody. And, yeah, it's a good game. And you talk about it in Baton Rouge, and you talk about it up in Pennsylvania. And people who bet on it, they watch it or whatnot. But it's not that big of a deal. The truth is that game gets played, and the minute it's over, nobody gives a damn ever again because it doesn't matter. But now, if it's 9-seed LSU going to 8-seed Penn State in a first round game for the right to play number one. Well, now you're talking about it totally different because we're saying, boy, I tell you, LSU in September wasn't so good. Today, they might be the hottest team in the country. And we're having that conversation, and then LSU beats Penn State. Now, all of a sudden, LSU gets a rematch with number one Alabama. And the last time they played, Billy Joe Johnson, the young quarterback for LSU, he was a little shaky, but you look at his last 7 weeks and he hasn't been shaky at all. And this could be interesting. It's a total reset of the storylines for college football. And quite frankly, it's significantly more attractive than what we've had in the past, because Billy Joe Johnson finishing up his season against Penn State in the Capital One Bowl in a game that doesn't matter, and Penn State's top four defensive players are all seniors and they all opted out because they're going to the NFL. Who cares? Unless you're an LSU fan, unless you're a Penn State fan, or unless you're just a junkie who watches football. And there's plenty of those too. But you want to make your sport even more mainstream, you have to have more games that are meaningful.
Yeah, and, you know, Grind brings up a question, true or false, the 12-team playoff benefits Wisconsin, Florida, and Texas the most. Well, I don't know about those three teams, but the teams like that. So let's take them. Yeah, you get 12 teams in the playoff. You know, Wisconsin, Texas, if you have a good year, I mean, I don't know if it, what it does, it gives a Texas a chance. If they can't get by Oklahoma, it gives them a chance to still make the playoffs. For Florida, if they can't get by Georgia, they can still make the playoffs. Wisconsin, if they have a really good year, win the West and can't get by Ohio State, which, you know, it's difficult to do, you can still make the playoffs. So that's going to be considered now for a while. You make the playoffs, well, a lot more teams are going to make the playoffs. So you're going to look at it and say, good, good year. Now, at what point, though, is the narrative going to be, well, you made the playoff, but you haven't won it? Because that's sure. The narrative right now to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. Well, he's gotten there, but he hadn't done anything. So now Kirby Smart gets railed because he hasn't won at all. Okay, well, you know, he's made it there, and probably because of where he's situated, you know, could have made it even in a 14 playoff at least one, if not two other times. They're going to make it every year now. Now, if he makes it and he doesn't do anything, I think there'll be greater criticism for some. Because for the elite program, if you're Alabama, if you're Clemson, if you're Ohio State, if you're Oklahoma, if you're Georgia, if you make the playoffs and you don't win, you're going to get hammered. Because right now, when they make it in the four and they don't get it, they get, not hammered, but they get, well, you're not as good as, well, sorry, nobody's good at Alabama. Alabama is the proverbial you-know-what in the punch bowl. They kind of ruin it for everybody. You know, sorry to be so graphic this morning, but it's just like everybody, if you grade it, which everybody does, you win a title or you suck, well, everybody sucks, with a little bit of the exception of Clemson. We're getting to the point where another 2 years, and maybe after this year, if Ryan Day doesn't win it all, he ain't no Urban Meyer.
Sure.
You know, he's gotten a little bit of a pass because he hadn't been at Ohio State as long as Kirby's been at Georgia, but we're getting that. So I think certain programs will. So here's the thing. If you're Florida, if you're Wisconsin, if you're Texas, man, if you're Texas and you make it to the playoffs, if you're Florida, you make it to the playoffs. Well, if you're Texas and you're Florida in a 12-team playoff, shouldn't you make it to the playoff? Shouldn't that be the floor of where you are? Should be. I mean, really. So if you don't do anything in the playoffs, I don't know about that. Wisconsin, I think Wisconsin would be pretty doggone happy. If you're Wisconsin, you're Iowa, you're Nebraska, you can get in as the second team in the Big Ten. You have a really good year. You lose to Ohio State, you're in good shape. If you're Michigan, throw them in with Florida and Texas. All of a sudden, Michigan would have made some of these, couple of these playoffs in the 12-team format and could. But if they make it every year and they Harbaugh still can't beat Ohio State, is anything really going to change? It's going to be, well, they made the playoffs, but unless they get hot and win in the playoffs, it's going to, yeah, he made the playoffs for 3 years in a row, but so what? He's not doing it. So I think the narrative is going to change for some. And the change is, man, it's going to be certain programs that are, man, they're good enough to make it to the playoffs. That's great. That's a great year for them. That narrative is going to change in a positive way. But the ones that do make it eventually, if you make it and don't do anything, it just doesn't affect. I mean, take a guy like, go back to baseball. Who's, I think LSU tied Cal Fullerton for the most trips winning. Mike Martin of Florida State's won the most. I think he's gotten there. I think he's won the most super regionals, most regionals, I think.
Yeah. Yet,
I don't think his Mike, he never won a national title, has he?
Never won.
And that's one of those things where he's a legend, but he's a legend without winning a title. You know, I think you will get to the point where you may have a football version of that. Man, you make it. What about Florida State? What about in 3 years if Florida State builds their program good enough? They are not going to jump ahead of Clemson anytime soon unless Clemson falls back. But Florida State is capable of, in 2 or 3 years, building the second best program in the ACC. Maybe making the national playoffs. That would be the ultimate right now. But eventually, if you don't win in the playoffs, then that's going to be a different narrative by their fan base. So we'll see how that plays out.
We've been brought to you today by Blue Sky. Blue Sky believes in being fast, fresh, and friendly through the thoughtful layout and cleanliness of their stores. Blue Sky hopes to provide customers with a fast, easy buying experience from services to products. Blue Sky plans to keep the things fresh and always provide the freshest flavors of the brand name products and the best services available. They've been bringing some of the newest products on the market to their stores to provide an even better customer experience. I know a lot of people are out traveling. It's summertime, people getting ready for the 4th and enjoying things being open and all of those things again, hitting the roads. You see one of those 48 store locations of Blue Sky across the Southeast, stop, tell them hello, tell them you heard about them here on SEC Football and Beyond, and we'd appreciate that. And you'll appreciate yourself for stopping because it's going to be clean, it's going to be nice, and you're going to feel nice and safe in any Blue Sky location where you stop. We're also brought to you by Alpha Specialties, 1670 Highway 80 in Pearl, Mississippi. They're your trailer-specific professional. If you want to haul it, they can call it. They've got the premium trailer dealership in Mississippi. They've got Load Trail, Hallmark Cargo Trailers. They also work with third parties to have game day trailers, concession trailers built, getting ready for the middle school football season, the high school football season. Your booster club or whatnot needs a concession stand that's kind of built just for you, one that you could move around if you needed to, or one that you just need installed at your stadium. The people at Alpha can take care of that for you. They also have spare tires and wheels starting at just $100. Full selection of trailer parts and accessories, hitches, winches, straps, more. AlphaOfMS.com, AlphaOfMS.com, or 601-932-9798.
Couple of notes on the way out the door. Arkansas is hiring Dwell Loggins to coach their tight ends.
Saw that.
Obviously, now he comes from Penn State as an analyst. He was the offense coordinator of the Jets and the Titans. A lot of experience. Good get for them and really good teaching the run game, run blocking. So really, really good signing for them and Sam.
They moved tight end coach to offensive line.
To offensive line coach, correct, which really fits in because he worked a lot with the tackles, particularly in the run game anyway. So it's a absolutely natural fit. Probably one that he would have made if this would have been made in January. You know, meaning, you know, he probably would have promoted up. But definitely at this stage, bringing somebody else new, it makes a lot more. Bringing the new guy in to tight ends, that's the way you want to do it because, you know, I think that makes a whole lot of sense what they're trying to do.
Shows you that Arkansas is pretty committed to being a run-oriented team. A pro
offensive line coach is your head coach, bud. They love that.
Well, you know, they think, and I've been up there some because with Campbell going to school there, and I've talked to some people, they just aren't convinced that they can recruit consistently the athletes that you need to run more of a spread style system, a high octane offense. I think everybody wants to do that, but sometimes you got to evaluate who you are, and they're not convinced that they can get into Florida and win those recruiting battles in Texas that you have to do to put the five wides on the field that can do that to a defense. But they do think, on the other hand, that, hey, we can have an identity that maybe Bielema was onto something. He just didn't do it the way it needed to be done. Mm-hmm. You can run a different style as we play in this league that's more and more and more and more wide open. When you line up and you get super physical, sometimes people aren't prepared for that on a one-off. But I don't think they're trying to become the wishbone. I just think there's some concern that, hey, this spread that
the Chad Morris situation failed.
Didn't work, right.
It flopped. That's why it's what happened most recently, and that was a disaster. Chad was going to recruit the heck out of Texas because he had all that background, and he was an ultimate spread guy. He was a big part of starting the Clemson success,
right.
And it both flopped. I mean, it was that was beyond bad. That was a disaster, and I didn't think it would work. By the way, I'll tell you the story one. Chad asked me to help him get the Ole Miss job. I'll tell you that story when we have more time, by the way. Because he was – remember, that was kind of coming to – anyway. Yeah. And then, you know, Bielema was brought in to challenge the Alabama-LSU run because you had less run in the football and before Nick – changed it, that was the power. So it was like, we're going to do that, and you can bring the Wisconsin-Iowa formula to where you can maybe not beat them consistently, but challenge them. Out the door and doing my previews, and I throw in a few nuggets. I'm working on the Alabama one. By the way, the Ole Miss one is going to be coming up within the hour. Finished it, just got to touch it up. But Alabama, we talk about recruiting, and that's certainly what they do better than anybody. But they also are the best at developing players. Do you know since 2008, the five stars that Alabama has recruited, 49% of them have gone on to be first-round picks.
Wow.
Okay, that's the definition of development.
That's why you keep landing five stars.
That's why you get them, and you know you say, "Well, why is everybody?" You know, you want to say, "Well, they want to." Why? Why? That's why they recruit the best, and they develop the best. So when we talk about the developmental programs, those are the programs that get the most out of less of the least, and there's a lot of them that do. We talk about them all the time. When you got programs that recruit really at a high level, when you do the best at both. I mean, it's why everybody else is kind of – the storyline of college football is, can anybody beat Bama? That's it. Let me say that again. Since 2008, their five-star recruits, 49% have become first-round draft picks. First-round draft picks. So we're getting our all our previews at work in our previews. Nuggets like that, news and notes, recapping everything, roster analysis, projected depth chart, who graded out – on the best players on each team last year, incoming recruiting last evaluation. So we got it all for you. Recapping the biggest story of the day that we opened up with, follow Neil McCready today and the folks at Rebel Grove. Will he stay or will he go? Mike Bianco appears to be the target of LSU now. after going through a number of different options that haven't worked out. Mike Bianco appears to be the guy that LSU at least wants to be their new head coach. Will Mike, being there 20-plus years, settled in Oxford, decide to stay? Will he go? How does that all play out? I am comfortable in saying we will definitely have that answer when we meet together on Friday, but we're possibly, I think, going to have an answer maybe within the 20. I don't know if Neil has an opinion on the timeline. It may happen, but I know this. Neil will be on top of it. We'll have it. Follow him on Twitter. Neil, give everybody that Twitter handle again, please.
It's my name, Neil McCready. And you can also follow at Rebel Grove. Typically do more Ole Miss-related tweets from Rebel Grove.
So follow him there, and we'll keep you up to date. The College World Series is set. 3 SEC teams in it. And, folks, you got to join us on Friday because we want to give all the fathers a happy Father's Day wish on Friday. For those of you that can't join us on Friday, maybe the missus and the family's taking you out. We wish you an early happy Father's Day. But join us Friday as we'll have probably that and certainly a lot of football discussions to take place on Friday. Neil, I know you're busy. I appreciate that. I didn't think I'd have you for an hour. I thought you would be whisked off. I thought we'd have maybe breaking news that would just somebody. I thought we'd be, what's the story like in the cartoons where, what is it, like the cane that somebody grabs you by the neck and pulls you off the set? Yeah. I thought we were going to have that today.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. After the last call that I got, I was pretty confident I had a little time. This afternoon's the earliest I think it could happen, but we'll see. These things are organic, as they say.
They're fluid, and we'll see. And it's about a decision that he has to make for his family. We'll see what he does. Man, we certainly appreciate Grind and Chet and Sammy and Georgia Reb and Jeff Parrott always with us. Who else joined us? Gosh, LSU Talk, good friend there. Apologize if I'm missing somebody. Blake joined us earlier. Appreciate all of you joining us. This is what we do the show for. We are in the process, Neil and I, of working out even ways to make this show better, bring it even onto different platforms with some different folks. So more on that as we try to figure that out the rest of the summer. But we're here. We're excited about what we're doing. We're excited about you guys. It's the middle of June. We're excited. Can you imagine the excitement as we get closer to football season? And folks, we plan on being here in 2023 when we're talking about the 12-team playoffs as well. So, Neil, parting words and anything you got to say, and good luck rest of the day. I know you'll be busy.
Yeah, no, just follow along. We'll have the Oxford Exxon podcast on MPW Digital and Rebel Grove as well a little later in the day, maybe a little later this morning. I'm not exactly sure. So those who want more of the Bianco Ole Miss drama, we'll have it for you. And I'll talk to you on Friday.
All right. For Neil, I'm Chris. Have a great one, everyone.